Welcome to the Practical Church Revitalization Podcast. We look at revitalization in real time, examining the ups and downs of revitalizing and replanting historic and legacy churches throughout New England and the U.S. Now here's your hosts.
All right. Welcome back to the Practical Church Revitalization Podcast. I am your host, Don McKinnon, and last week was quite a week. We had planned to record and have a dump of stuff ready to go up and out, up and at 'em. So if you had been watching the news, you would have known we got hit by a blizzard and then an ice storm. And it was choppy for a long time. We had lost power here for about 5 hours. And so by the time we would have been recording, it was freezing and we were waiting for the heater to just begin heating the place, and so we weren't in the mood for that. So sorry for last week. I know it's not good etiquette when you are a podcast host to not have something to go, but que sera sera. Anyway, interesting stuff going on. I am working on getting some discipleship stuff worked out. I've actually been working with Eric this week and have stuff ready to go. Still working out some fine details. I'm remembering what he told me: do not preach it until it's ready to go. And today, actually, my wife had a doctor's appointment, and then we traveled back to our hometown of Brockton, which, for those of you out there, if you want to know Sutton to Brockton, it's about an hour or so away. And I had to take care of some stuff that was from last year when my uncle passed away. So I had to go and do that, and then come back here and decided I would get a couple of episodes recorded for you. And it's an exciting time, I think. We just had our business meeting. We just changed a few bylaws. We are going through the bylaws now and looking at exactly what we can and should replace. Some other exciting stuff. We've got a oversight committee that we are calling that is going to help our new finance committee and property committees do better for our place and look over the finances, figure out where we need to stop some bleeding there, stopgap, and then the property. You know, it goes hand in hand, really, when you think of it. You can't do anything with the property until you have the finances straightened out. But it's also like looking at the property and saying, this needs to be done, this needs to be done, this needs to be done. And we know. We know that there are things that, you know, we have to live with. We know that there are things that we're going to be living with for a while. And we know that there are things that we want to see changed, but we're not there. And so a lot of that goes with the discipleship process, because I've really been giving it a lot of thought on a lot of levels with a lot of things. And it's going to be a little bit of a change. I think like having some visitors that we've had over the last year, last 12 to 15, 16 months, really got me thinking as a pastor. And, at the time I had the excuse of being in seminary and really trying to just get that done. But, you know, here's the thing. Seminary was a need because seminary helped refine and finish a lot of stuff that was going on with me and helped me put stuff together. But at the same time, you know, it's like it was a sacrifice that needed to be done for now. And I think in the long run, as we're going, as Dave Jackson just told me the other day, it's gonna be something where I know what I want to say. It's gonna be something where we're gonna see how I'm trying to think. It's going to be something to see how we get to the next level here. And that's kind of where this podcast is going today. So if you've tuned in and you saw the title of the podcast, the title is quite a mouthful, but let's be honest, you know, it's the truth. So the title of this podcast is Five Things Revitalizers Wish Visitors and Guests Understood. And as revitalizers, we come to this calling knowing that this church doesn't have it all together. A lot of things have happened. A lot of things have been taken away. And there is a lot of things that visitors and guests, when they come to the church, they're expecting, because technically, yes, the revitalization is an established church, but you are a revitalization for a reason. And, you know, if you are like me, we kind of have it out there that we are a revitalization. We have a video on the Legacy Church website right now where it explains being a revitalization and what that looks like, and what we're hoping to have come into the church. And so these are the things that we are trying to do. These are the things that we are looking at, and we know that there are things we wish people understood. They come in, they look around. We've all heard it. Love the message, Pastor. You know, really good message. But there's always that but. And so I decided to put this list together. And let me say this. The one thing, when I put this list together, the one thing I know is that some things are all, you know, this is one of those lists where everything is tied together. Everything is tied together. And, you know, it's one of those things that we as revitalizers have to understand. And so, you know, it's something when people don't understand why there are, you know, a lot of instruments up on the stage, but only one guy doing the worship. You know, I'll give that example. We have families that have come to the church and been able to play instruments. If you ever came to Legacy Church, you would see a piano and drum set up on the stage, but we really don't have a place to put those. We could put them downstairs, but downstairs floods on occasion. And so we'd be wrecking close to $1,000 worth of equipment if it flooded down there. So it's good for us to put them on stage and keep them there. But for the most part, there are people that would sit there and say, it just doesn't make sense, you know. So, you know... It's kind of understanding that we want, you know, we're trying to tell people we want to have musicians up there. In fact, our musician was even saying it the other day at men's prayer and even at our business meeting that he wants to see, we have a couple where the husband plays drums, but he has a job right now where he's not available every Sunday. You know, like once we get in, like we're in February now, so come April, his job is going to kick in and he's going to be having to work every Sunday between April and October. And so he's not available those times. So the drums will just stay empty. And that's what's been going on. And we do want to see. We want to have a full band. And yeah, it gets frustrating. And this goes in with a lot of other things. So let me just begin. Let me just begin this point by starting with number five. Number five is, we have more people than you're seeing today. Now, that is classic. That is if you have heard Tom Rainer or Mark Clifton or any number of pastors out there, they will tell you, this is not something you want to say on a Sunday. I can remember this past year, we had guests come on Memorial Day weekend. And, of course, Memorial Day weekend, everybody's away. And so they came in, and I think we only had 11 people in church that Sunday. And so, you know, when you're a small church, you know, when you're missing, you know, 6, 7, 8 people, you feel it. And that's what we were doing. We were definitely feeling it on that Sunday. And so the thing is, you don't want to say that. You don't. Hopefully, you have a good website, a good social media page, and you're showing people what goes on, the life and activity of your church. And maybe they'll sit there and understand that it's not like this. You came on a holiday. Just, you know, please come back next week. There's going to be more people here. That's what you hope. It doesn't always happen that way. you know, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at it in that regard. Like, my old pastor used to have me keep a record of attendance for the church, and that was difficult as we got bigger. When it was like 50 people, I knew who they were, and I could also write down the guests and everything. But, you know, as we got bigger, as we moved into our own, you know, not an abandoned church, but we had merged with a dying church, and I got to know more people, and it was something that just grew. And you sit there and you know that you have people and you have attenders. My point on this is, when you're a revitalizer, you're doing the same thing mentally, and it gets draining at times because you can't count how many visitors you've had. But most likely, you know, you have a guesstimate on it. Now, I can tell you that when I came here, now last year was kind of a different story, but for the first 3.5 years that I was here, I kept a smart record of attendance and our guests. And I can tell you, we had over 100 guests each year for the last 3 years. And last year, I'm sure it was the same. I just don't know. I just didn't feel like doing it last year. Partially because of the tiredness of COVID, partially because, you know, you start to say to yourself, what's the use? And the thing is that I look at it, you know, I think 1 year we had 180 guests, another year, 130 guests. And I think the first year I was here, we had 118. So, you know, 118, 130, and 180. And you begin to wonder why they're not staying. And you kind of wish they all showed up at the same time. That goes into my second point, but it's number four on the countdown. And that's, we really have children's and youth programs. And the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, I have a friend, a pastor friend, who told me that he struggled for years to have youth show up at his church. And you hear this whole thing. You hear all this crazy stuff. Well, you just got to get youth up there. You just got to... But when you don't have youth coming into your church, when your church is not youthful, that's where you struggle. That's when you sit there and you're like, you know, what do we do? And so for this one pastor, he told me that, you know, he had people show up on one Sunday after he was getting frustrated. Both families had kids and they stuck around. The thing is, 6 months later, he found out that they thought the other person was a regular attender at the church. And so they stuck around. And so there's always that chance. There's always that weird, odd chance. I think of it last year for us, we had people showing up. And, you know, I remember we had one family show up. They had a kid and a teen. And the teen was kind of connecting with our teens, but the kid was not actually able to really connect with some of the kids that we had. And it really stank because, you know, then it was like they left, and then 4 months later, we had another family visit with younger kids, and they didn't stick because they said, well, you don't have kids. And then same thing down the road, another 4 or 5 months later, you have another family that comes with kids. They don't see it. And then we had two families visit. And, you know, it's one of those things. You sit there as a pastor. And for me, it's like, you know, I don't know how to sell it, but I just want to say, you know, here's the story. Here's the thing. We really do have children's and youth programs. And here's the thing. If you guys stick around, you're going to see in another couple of months, we're going to have another family come through the doors with kids that are looking for the children's program. And so you're going to help grow the church in that way. And really, that's the thing. You know, when I look at it and I say, if all these families stuck around, my wife would be leading a youth ministry with about 8 to 10 kids right now, and a children's ministry with 8 to 10 kids right now, and our youth program, our youth ministry would be probably about 5 to 8 kids. And that's the thing. You sit there and you're wondering, like, how can we do this? How can we go ahead and build these things up? You know, for us, I know one of our roadblocks is we are in a very rural area. Nobody can really walk. You know, like I had somebody say, well, you should be able to have people walk. No, we're on a busy street, you know, and the town doesn't want to put sidewalks in. So that becomes a whole story in and of itself. But it's not excuses. It's understanding that we all have roadblocks and we do have children's and youth programs. And so that's what a pastor really wishes that visitors and guests understood, is some of the roadblocks that are there, which are keeping the program from really growing and really, you know, kind of getting that point across about becoming a part of the church and active. But a lot of people, that's the one thing. A lot of people expect things to be there. They expect certain things in place. They expect certain things to be there. And when they're not, that gets frustrating. And they wonder if the church really wants that. And the truth is, they do. That goes into the third, you know, number three on the list. So this is actually the third point and number three on the list of the countdown. And that is, our goal is to have missions giving, but we are just making it week to week. The other thing to realize within a lot of revitalizations is they have gotten into survivor's mode. Now, survivor's mode for any regular listener listening is when the church is just making sure that the bills are paid, the pastor is paid, if the pastor is paid at all, and you know, what other stuff is going on. And so missions giving becomes secondary. I know of a church where they've seen that. In fact, my church is one of those ones. We want to give to missions. I have friends who are getting ready to plant churches, and I would love to be able to support them. But our church, when it comes to the giving, is not able to right now, much less give to, you know, we do give to our state convention, which gives money to the cooperative program, which supports foreign missionaries out there. But we do not have like a list of missionaries that we support right now because we do not have the giving. And a lot of that has to do with having a finance committee together and looking over the finances and saying, these are the things that we need to do, and these are the areas that we need to work on to be able to get to that next level. So that's the thing. You know, a lot of churches have that. They want to give to missions. But when people come in and they're like, well, you're not really a church because you're not giving to missions, you know, that's judging, and that's not understanding what exactly a revitalization is. That a revitalization is struggling to keep the doors open. And really, because they may have that thought, idea, attitude, whatever you want to call it, they're taking away from this church being able to bless people, because now you're walking out the door and you're not allowing this church to grow. You're not giving this church an opportunity to really bring back glory to God. So that's always something to really understand. And, you know, I know of churches that are really struggling right now to really make ends meet. I know one church that's actually getting ready to sell their building to a church that's been renting from them because they're just not making it right now. And those are the things that we have to understand. And we wish people understood that, you know, this is what it really means to be a revitalization. You know, a lot of people kind of sit there and they think, well, you're just saying this to get my money. You're saying this to make me feel bad. But the truth is, if you don't understand what a revitalization is, and really the desperate need for you to become a part of something that God is trying to bring back to life, you know, you're missing out on watching God do a miracle. And that's always going to be something awesome to see. And I've seen it myself with my former church. And now, you know, they've gone ahead, they've replanted Legacy, they've replanted several other churches. And it's one of those things, you know, they're trying to see the same thing that happened for them and what was Central Baptist Church really take hold. The other thing is this. You know, number two on this countdown, number four, is I'm not responsible for this mess. Most of the time, the pastor that is there, if he is new, he's not responsible. And a lot of people tend to blame, you know, they think that the pastor, you know, new pastor is going to be the silver bullet, and he's going to come in and you know, things are going to pick up, and in 6 months we're going to be at three services and, you know, all sorts of stuff. We're going to have a building program. We'll be praying for God to, you know, give us property so that we can build and all sorts of stuff. And it's not that. A lot of it has to do with the attitude of the people that are there. And a lot of that is trying to rebuild what the previous leadership had destroyed. In other words, the previous leadership probably was spiritually bankrupt, and because of that, that goes over into the congregation. So it's understanding that a pastor can be really good. You know, you can see a pastor, you can put the blame on the pastor if you want, but the understanding is if the pastor's been there for a short period of time, it takes 7 to 10 years for a church to get the attitude of their current pastor if there's been a replacement in the leadership. And so it's understanding that. And so a lot of people will put the blame for whatever's going on the pastor. And it's not fair. It's not a fair thing. Now, I don't know if anybody who puts blame on me, but I've seen it with other pastors. I've seen it in groups that I'm a part of where the pastor just after 4, 5, 6 years quits. And he may never go back into ministry because he is so down for being blamed for what was going on. And in truth, he wasn't even the responsible party for what was going on. And that leads to number one on this countdown. And that's, I'm stretched and have no more bandwidth to give. Let me explain it in this regard. So, I used to hear this from a number of pastors. And I really wondered what that meant. I can remember one pastor told me he had no more bandwidth to give, and you know, it was something we were trying to do a meeting or something, and I was like, "Oh, I can help you with the computer, you know, or something." And I didn't understand what he was talking about. He has so many duties that he is just stretched beyond measure. And I've come to understand this over the last year as I'm trying to piece stuff together. And as school ended and all sorts of fine stuff, I'm sitting here saying to myself, you know, what can I possibly do? How can I possibly do it? Case in point, you know, we have, like I said, we have teens, and we're praying for youth leaders because we have a huge opportunity with teenagers playing basketball in the back of our church at the basketball court. But I'm stretched bandwidth wise. You know, I think it's Frodo Baggins in Lord of the Rings that says it best, where he says, "I feel like butter spread over too much toast." Because I work at a school, and then I come back here, and I'm supposed to be working on a sermon. And at the same time, I've got to meet with different committees and different people, and I've got to get out into the community and all sorts of stuff. And you just feel spread. So then when you have that opportunity where you see the kids out there playing, you know, it's kind of like you want to go out there, but really it's Friday afternoon and I have not been able to begin writing the sermon just yet. So it's one of those things. People don't understand. The guests and visitors don't understand that a pastor can be in revitalization, stretched at times. I have just not wanted to talk for long with people because I'm an introvert by character. And so I'm already, you know, I have a certain amount of time that I can give. But if I'm stretched, now it becomes a deeper thing. And so this is where, you know, it's important to be praying. You know, as a church, as a pastor, if you're listening and you go to a revitalization, or you're listening and you have recently visited churches, this is the important thing to be praying for with these churches, is that God sends workers. You know, that's the one thing with us. We have a whiteboard in our prayer room right now where we actually are praying for youth leaders and musicians and children's leaders and families and all sorts of things. A lot of what you just heard on this list is already part of our prayers because we want to see that. And it's really understanding where those things are coming from. And we want people to know this. We want the visitors and guests to know this, but we can't always say it. And so the thing is, try to be smart with it. Try to be smart when you have the conversations with people. Pursue, that's one thing I've learned, is pursue people, talk to them, try to find out what's going on and where their headspace is, you know, how they're thinking about the church. And if they understand really what a revitalization is. Part of one thing that I'm looking at doing is, we're redoing our onboarding process and our membership process and a number of things. And so it's trying to explain it more in depth to them what it is that we're actually trying to do here and how they can become a part of it. So that's it for this episode. I hope that it really helped you understand. Maybe for you pastors, you're sitting there nodding your heads and just in full agreement with what I just said. And who knows, maybe you just, you're just understanding the whole thing and saying, yeah, that makes sense to me. That definitely makes sense to me. So with that, I'm going to close out. If you like this podcast, please like and subscribe. Write us a review on whatever you're listening to, because that gets the message out of what we're trying to do here. And we hope to see you, well, hear you, or you hear us. I don't know how to quite word that. But we will be back next week with another new episode of the Practical Church Revitalization Podcast.